Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Tuesday edition here on Zero Block 30, and we are locked down just like everybody else. Well, Kate and Cons aren't. You're going to see them in a little bit whenever we have our social clips come up. But they are in the office together, but they are doing basically PT formation lengths apart. They're double hands apart where they could do side straddle hops between each other, so they should be fine. And today, we have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, coronavirus lockdowns are in full effect. It's only been one weekend and boredom has already started to set in. We're going to teach you the ancient military method of hurry up and waiting. Round number two, magnets. How do they work? Not only that, but there's other weird stuff too because you're locked down, so you have plenty of time to think about it. We're going to hop right in something that's not coronavirus related today. For round number three, we had longtime stoolie Boris come in and read the round. You'll remember Boris because he's a gentleman who shaved my beard while I was in New York a few months ago. He's been helping up with graphics and all other kinds of stuff with the podcast too. Boris, why don't you come in here?
Us pisket Russians are back in the news. Coronavirus be damned. We head to Alaska to check out. I switched to an Irish accent there.
An attempt was made.
Anyways, it says, us pesky Russians are back in the news. Coronavirus be damned. We head to Alaska to check out our most beautiful state. Did we get caught? You'll have to wait to see. And round number three. And round number four, everything in America is changing, which includes military stuff too. Boot camp is delayed. All PCS and TDY moves are halted until at least May 11th. Some of those spots are worse than others. We took to the ZBT platoon to remind us some of the worst places that you could possibly be on lockdown. You're in New York City right now.
Yes.
What was the general vibe around? Did it feel like a movie, kind of?
I'm going to say no. I said this to Lars this morning. I walk in the streets. There's people walking around. I saw maybe one mask. There are people that if you did not have any access to news, newspapers, phone, whatever, you might not know that there's anything going on.
I definitely think it's totally a vibe. At least where I'm at, my subway stop this morning was like a complete ghost town. And that was still in the morning. Normally, the platform's like packed with people, even when I come in.
Even at the time that you
even come? Even at the time, yeah. I come in, it's normally pretty crowded. And my train had maybe, my subway car had like three people in it. It was super quiet. Then coming up at Herald Square, normally there's way more of a hustle and bustle. But it's not like panicky. I think it's, you know, the people who can stay home are staying home. The people that have stuff to do are doing what they have to do. But people are being smart about it for the most part. And then coronavirus shaming, that's a hot ticket item right now. So I stayed in most of the whole weekend. Mm-hmm. I went to a park on Saturday with two of my bocce friends. Mm-hmm. We stood about 6 feet apart and chatted with each other outside in this wide open space. Mm-hmm. And people were in my DMs like, you should be ashamed of yourself. And then I went for a walk last night in my neighborhood by myself in the open away from people. And more people were like, you're spreading it. You're spreading it. And I was like, what? I have no symptoms. I'm not going near people. We're allowed outside still. Like, I understand the importance and the severity of it, but at the same time, and like we're here in the office, like I'm grabbing a microphone and stuff today. Mm-hmm. I'm fully prepared to reel it back in and fully stay in my apartment for the next few weeks. But there's a line.
I mean, it kind of has a feel of like a holiday, right around a holiday when the city, there's still things going on, but there's definitely less people. So I don't get the vibe that like people are worried and scared and it's like imminent danger and fear. I think there's certain people that are, or most people are concerned and rightfully so. But the whole people shaming is ridiculous because everybody out there, it's like everybody's an expert. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. None of you are experts.
Yeah.
Okay? So don't feel the need to be the one that, oh, you know, my aunt's best friend's sister works at a veterinarian hospital and she said this, that, and the other thing. Stop. So, you know, just take the information from the proper channels. And I will say, I'd like to see less of the president right now, as ridiculous as that seems. You'd like to see like the president out in front of this thing. So maybe he could be the face of it. But then Put Dr. What's his name? Dr. Farouche, or I'm mispronouncing his
Oz?
Name. Fauci. He's the expert. He's the guy I want to hear from.
Mm-hmm.
He is the only one, not the only one, but he is one of the very few people in this country that has dealt with something that could potentially be compared to on this scale when he dealt with the AIDS epidemic in the 80s and the 90s. He has the experience dealing with this sort of situation. I'd like to see more of him.
You know who's been real quiet in this whole thing?
Who?
And she used to be all up on her high horse, going around, had her own series. Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Oh, yeah. I've been looking for Dr. Quinn out
nowhere
there.
Nowhere to be found.
Excellent point, Kate.
As soon as shit hits the fan, she's gonzo.
Yeah.
Pretty sad.
Sully's not out there either.
I know.
You don't think the American people would love to see Sully in a buffalo skin, little negligee, trouncing about with his butt cheeks swinging back off of a horse? I would.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
So, yeah, I've been taking it pretty seriously. We haven't left the house since Thursday evening. Haven't left the house at all, like staying in. But I have, like, lung issues and shit like that. It's not something I'm willing to fuck with. I've been reading all kinds of medical journals. I've been reading stuff from Italy and South Korea, how they're handling it. Japan's medical system is unbelievable. The things that they do and hop in and they're like, we're going to take over. We're going to do exactly what our people need to do. Them and Norway kind of leading the old world and how we should responding. Did you see that Norway said that they were going to take everybody who has lost work or like hourly workers, they were going to hop in. Norway was going to pay 75% and only require the private companies to pay 25% of their employee salaries, like that they're going through, because that's a big thing. Like, you have, there is that aspect of shaming that Kate and Cons were talking about, especially people who work in the bar industry and they're bartenders or they're barbacks or they're waitresses or they're out there mowing lawns. They're in the hourly category of working. What are you supposed to do? And that's whenever you have a country that is constantly living paycheck to paycheck, that people are concerned about not only how am I going to get toilet paper in my house, how am I going to get food in my house, how am I going to make my mortgage payment, how am I going to make my rent payment, how am I going to make my car payment, how am I going to make any payment, how am I going to fucking eat, what am I going to do? So you have not only a virus that's spreading, but it's this financial mindset that is really going to be pervasive over the next couple of weeks. That's all we're going to say about that right now, because we're going to try to take your mind off of coronavirus for the next 50 minutes or so, because we've got some things to talk about that aren't necessarily coronavirus related, and if they are, we're going to do it with a little bit of levity, and we're going to start that right now with round number one. Because one of the biggest aspects of the military that I love now that I'm out, and I hated at the time, and it starts from day fucking one. Well, even before that, like pre-training days in boot camp, where it's a hurry up and wait. Cons, explain the concept of hurry up and wait. What does hurry up and wait mean?
Hurry up and wait is when you're on the precipice of a training exercise, you're going somewhere, maybe a dental appointment as a group, and you get there and they're just not ready for you to start. So you get there and it's like, hey, what's going on? What's going on? What are we doing? What are we doing next? How do we go from here to there? And they just say, yeah, just hang out. Just wait. Just wait until we get some direction.
I would say,
Kate, do you remember your first hurry up and wait?
I would just say 75% of your entire, like, I was in almost 5 years. I would genuinely say 75% of it was just waiting for something. Was just standing yeah. in a line, waiting for
sitting
something.
Sitting down.
The worst, longest line is SIF, waiting to get your SIF gear or turn it back in or whatever. That's the shittiest
one. That's
like
all your supply. Like, you have to get your flak jackets, your fucking Kevlar, your helmets, or all that shit.
Yeah. I have a confession.
Hmm.
Okay. When I was returning all of my gear when I was out processing from Fort Hood to return to New Jersey, I did not ask for this, but when I walked into the facility, rank has its privileges. I just got grabbed, didn't have to wait in any lines.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's the
fucking
way it goes.
Loafers, man.
But yeah, so just always hurry up and waiting. Friday evening, you're still at work for some reason, and you're just waiting for the commander. You're standing in formation for like an hour, and he's probably in there just finishing a beer, you know?
Oh, they definitely are, dude. Like, that was the worst part about being a staff NCO, is that mind switch that goes from like a regular NCO to a staff NCO, and you kind of get into the higher levels of shit when you're dealing with company commanders, battalion commanders a little bit more often. I would have to go in when my first sergeant went on leave for having first sergeant Lugo. Whenever he had a baby, he went on paternity leave, so I was the acting first sergeant for a little while, and I had to go get the company commander, and the entire company's out there, And I go in there, and his name is Captain Tomasek. He's Major Tomasek now, full names. He's just sitting in there fucking around on his phone playing Snake, dude. Like, he's just playing Snake while the rest of the Marines are out in formation just waiting for him.
He's not, what are you doing? He's not a lieutenant colonel by now? He's still just a major?
He was too busy playing Snake. He was too busy playing Snake to get it going.
That's too bad. Yeah. But no, that's probably the worst part about Hurry Up and Wait is just the lack of information. You have no idea why it is you're waiting.
Yep.
That's the big time snick it till you make it to the formation.
But yeah, like genuinely, I swear to God, 75%, I think that's a like legitimate count. It's like,
so we, yeah, it is. I definitely think it is. But we come up in that 75% that Kate's talking about, especially for the enlisted side. We come up with great games. I came up with a list of 9 different things that I want to see if you guys did while you were in service too. Round number one, we're going to go through these pretty quickly. Our number one, throw rocks at other rocks. Did you guys do that?
Sure. All the time.
Great game.
That might be the best game ever. I still play occasionally. Whenever McCartney has T-ball or something like that, and we're sitting around waiting for like a rain delay, like, let's play throw this rock at that rock. Let's see who can hit it first. It's a great game.
Can't leave the armory till everybody's weapons clean. So there's like always that one guy who has rust somewhere or whatever, and it's taking forever. So everybody just sitting, leaned up against the chain link fence, one big rock about 20 feet or 10 feet or whatever away, and everybody just throwing smaller rocks at it.
But
and
once you hit it, the first one that hits it, you're like, oh!
Yeah, it's everybody very acts exciting. Like
it's a big deal.
Yep.
Number two, throw rock at pole. Kind of like throw rock at rock, but throw rock at just a pole, which is it's a step up, I think.
It is a step up. It's a little bit riskier, though. Higher ups, for some reason, they don't mind rock on rock, but for God forbid you hit a sign or a pole when they're looking, forget it.
Now, in lieu of March Madness. Hey there, Devil Dogs,
go back to rock on rock. No rock on pole.
Yeah.
In lieu of March Madness, you got really lucky if you were sitting there and there was one of those big metal trash bins so you could go rock in trash bin.
Oh, that's well, that's what you have whenever you have all kinds of gear. That's a luxury item.
Very much
so. Rock and bend. The third one, this is my personal favorite, burn stuff a little bit.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
No, and that's a very important point to make. Not just like, hey, let's pyro burn things down. It's like, just a little bit. See if it'll burn.
This is how it would start with us. You have, I believe they say it's like not PC anymore to say, but the IPs, the Irish pennants, the little like strings that stick off your uniform. And you'd be like, well, we're all standing here. Let me get some of your IPs. So you take out your lighter and you start burning off somebody's IPs.
You just square away their uniform.
You burn their uniform a little bit. Everybody's goofing. You're like, oh, it burned so-and-so's uniform a little bit. Ha-ha. And then people start pulling stuff out of their pockets. A little pile has started. Now we're really burning stuff. We also had a guy with a big magnifying glass for some reason that he brought into the field. And we were trying to see what we could burn holes in, what we could set on fire. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great game. That trying to burn your MRE packaging with a magnifying glass. Mm-hmm. That's really fun.
Yep.
My buddy Bleezy, he was a big peach fuzz guy because a lot of fellas, whenever you're 22, 23, first coming in, your beard doesn't really grow in. Mine was that way. I honestly believe that if I never joined the Marine Corps, I wouldn't have a beard because I think it came in more thick after I was in for a while because I was shaving every day. Well, Bleezy was a big time peach fuzz guy where he would just get like the onesies and twosies. Whenever I would see that, I knew that he had forgot to shave so he wouldn't get in trouble. I would burn his facial hair off like inflammation before we would go. Like get as close as you can to see you could singe and. Burn your buddy just a little bit. It's a step up in the third game that we have.
Anytime you can add a level of danger, it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. All right, the number four one is I would say of all three of us, Kate would probably do the best because she is the artist recruit of the bunch.
Yep.
She does like to paint. She does like get into it. Mm-hmm. Drawing penises is number four.
I kept a Sharpie in my cargo pocket pretty much wherever I went. I tagged a million Port-a-Johns inside and out. And yeah, that was a big thing for me. And you're writing the rain notebook, every page had a dick on it.
Oh yeah. Whenever you're trying to draw a formation, you draw like your left lateral limits. If you didn't try to make that into a dick in some way, you were big time wrong. For me, whenever you're coming in, I would always know if I was going to discipline Marines for drawing dicks on stuff by how good the dick actually was. Mm-hmm. If the dick is beautiful and just veiny and it looks really real, you're not going to get in trouble with that. If you just do basically a three with a bigger loop in the middle, like a humpback three, you're getting in big trouble with that. Not only is it just lazy. I don't like that.
My dick's always had one vein, two curly boing pubes, and then a little smiley face with a single tooth. That's what my dick sounded like. Lay.
See, you should have had the one with the little vein, and then somebody come in with the lighter on your picture, too, and trying to burn those little hairs down.
Those little pubes off.
two and one. You mix up round or three and four. Number four or number five is going to be give a friend a haircut. That's when you have a little bit more time on your hand.
I think this is at Bullock, so that's some officer shit you have to go do in the Army. Anyway, my buddy Russ Osterfeld, I actually just looked up his name, so I made sure I couldn't remember how to pronounce his last name. But Russ Osterfeld, I needed a haircut. It had been a while, and it was Friday, and we were going to go to the bar or something. He's like, oh, yeah, just come over. I'll trim you up. It's like, all right, cool. I got to do a few things. I'll be right over. Well, in the amount of time it took me to do whatever it is I needed to do, he had about 2.5 cocktails in him. Because at that point, you could keep – we were in barracks, but you could keep liquor in there. And I realized like halfway into the haircut, when now he's like 3.5 drinks deep, this was a mistake. Because he just kept going higher and higher and higher to even it out. And it just – it was the worst haircut I've ever gotten.
You seem like you would have been a very particular haircut type of guy too.
Well, you know, I'm very quick to trust. If someone says – I think – being able to cut hair is not something just everybody says. Like, obviously, anyone can take clippers and just give you a buzz cut. Like, there's no skill involved in that. But if someone says to you, like, oh, no, I know how to cut hair, and, like, I can give you a fade, I feel like that's not something you just run around lightly. Like, you know you can do that. So if someone says that to me, I'll put my trust in them.
And that's I got to be honest. I agree with Cons. If you tell me that you can cut my hair, I'll be like, okay.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. But, I mean, with dudes, you fuck up your hair. You fuck up your hair for like 2 weeks.
Right.
Like especially military length. It's not fucked up for long. Ladies, I've seen some ladies go to get their haircuts on base, and it ends up in an absolute nightmare. Kate, did you have those experiences?
Yeah, we never cut each other's hair. But also I want to say, because I was a woman and the only one in my barracks very oftentimes, men just assumed that I knew how to cut hair for some reason. And so they'd come knock on my door and be like, Corporal Mannion, can you blah, blah, blah? And I'd be like, do you think I cut? It was like how my office thought I could always be the admin one.
Corporal Mannion, this recruit forgot to get his hair cut.
Or they would do it themselves and then ask me if I could just get that one spot in the back. And I'd be like, you don't know how much I fuck stuff up all the time. Like, you don't want this. But anyway, so many bad haircuts for women, because if it's below the collar length, there was just women's haircuts in the military. Just put it in a bun.
Shave
it down short or put it in a bun, because that middle
and
length.
And whenever it's short and it's flying all over the place, like, what are we
it's
doing?
It's tough. Man? It's a tough go. Yeah.
And then if not, you have to put so much of that L.A. gear gel. What is that?
Ton of the gel. And then
like the $3 gel that's like 8 gallons.
Women would wear. They would put fake buns. They would attach big old fake buns to the back of their head. And
really?
some in the non
like socks, right?
In the non-combat units, I feel like the bigger the bun, like it was a pride thing. Like some women would put like huge socks, like wrap 4 socks around and make a huge sock bun.
Really?
It's like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
There was a gunny at OCS, and she was an instructor at OCS, and she had a bun like as big as my head.
Mm-hmm.
And she walked by when she was in Charlie's, and she had like a stack. She had done some shit in combat too. And she had this ribbon rack, and her uniform was always perfect. Like her Charlie's were crisp. The seams were, her uniform was immaculate. Like you couldn't look at anything and be like, she is squared the fuck away. When she walked by with her bun just looking like a crown on her head, I would be like, holy shit, she will literally kill me with Marine Corps regulations.
The only other thing I'll say on this, because my brain just drifted while you're talking about long hair, the Norwegian military and stuff, those men are
so hot.
But those men, they look like fucking Vikings, and they're allowed to have long hair in their uniforms.
Oh.
Grab the mop daddies, because that is
hot.
I was unaware of these
regulations.
Yeah, it is.
Take me to the range, ladies. Bend me over shotgun style, and unload show clear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Ladies, look it up.
Speaking of chaps, do you remember when you would see a female, enlisted member or officer, and their hair is always
and
up?
And gave them respect?
Yes, and gave them the proper amount of respect. And then for whatever reason, whether it was a social event or you just happened to run into them out at a bar or something and you saw their hair down, it was night and day, like a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could really like, whoa, that's not
But I always was kind of jealous of that too, of like women Marines. Whenever you would come out in town and you could go out to Target.
Oh, I was a total shitbag. Yep.
Right, you could be like a total
shower
bag
shoes,
of shit.
Sweatpants,
but me with my high
time.
And tight, I can't do that. Everybody, it's like a red flag. Everybody knows you're in the military, right? Then and there. All right, let's move on to the next one. The next one, wax a friend's body part. Did we ever get in that?
No.
I never did this
Nope, not a thing.
This is one of my favorite ones. This is a Camp Fallujah special. So we would have, we had a big rat problem in Fallujah, or mice, I guess you would
say. Yeah, they're everywhere.
And they didn't have the type of rat traps with the metal bar that would go over and smack down and crush the mouse's head or whatever. They just had the sticky ones. And I essentially, I think those are even more mean because it basically just starves the mouse to death, where they can't move, they can't drink or anything like that, but they're like that. So they had this huge sticky pads on it that were made of glue, like super glue, but we would take them and put them on each other's chest and use them as like wax strips. I did one on the inside of my thigh once, and it took off like the first three or four layers of skin. It was just really, really bad. That one is when you get real bad, is when you wax a buddy.
Well, speaking of mice, was a big pastime overseas, like you were saying. Like, we didn't wax each other with it.
I love that caveat. Speaking of mice, that's a big pastime.
That was, for us in Afghanistan on the first tour, there was nights on that I could feel them crawling over my body as I slept. You could feel them climbing
disgusting.
Up. They were. It was so bad. And you could just hear them in the little, that tube in the tent where the air came out. You could hear them, and then you'd feel them on your... Anyways, so we would come up with unique ways to try and catch them. And I was always having my mom ship me those big cheese ball barrels all the time. That would be like four of those in a package. And so we would create ramps. We'd leave some cheese balls at the bottoms, and then we'd create all sorts of crazy ramps. So they would climb up, fall, and then in the morning, you'd have like a cheese ball barrel with a bunch of mice in it. It was like a thing.
And that's a great lure, is the cheesy smell.
Yep. So, but we would come up with all sorts of unique ramps and like...
Did you win anything if you had the most mice?
Right. That was the thing. We saved them all. Then you put them in the different, whoever's tent had the most. Yeah, it was a thing. Anyway.
Speaking of cheese balls, when I think of food, I always think of the Army-issued honey buns. Did you guys ever do eating challenges? Like, who could eat something the fastest?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good
honey bun
too.
Challenge was a
honey
big
bun
one.
Challenge
that,
was a good
that
one.
That one, marshmallows and shit like that.
I nearly choked and died doing the honey bun challenge just because I refused to lose to one of my soldiers. That wasn't safe at all.
Honey buns eating season.
Yeah, definitely. It's always. That's like chow in the field. It's continuous. Number seven, I got drink a lot. I don't think we have to spend a lot of time on that.
Yep.
That is what we do. We drink a lot. Number eight, this is a personal fun game, and I kind of got it, and we used to do it in the kennels in Okinawa a lot, is that you would take a T-shirt, like a skivvy shirt or something like that, get it really wet, and then put it in a freezer and see who could like straighten it out the fastest. Did you guys ever do that?
No, I've never heard of this before in my life.
Never done that one.
We should do it next time you're here.
Yeah, next time I'm there, we'll have a race for a video to see who can do it. It's tough, man. It doesn't seem like it'd be something that's very difficult, but think about your fingers constantly touching something that's frozen and trying to pry it apart. The ends of your fingers start to hurt so bad. T-shirts.
Yeah. You lose the dexterity
finally,
in your fingers.
What's that?
I was just saying, you lose the dexterity in your fingers once they get too cold.
True.
So they can't operate.
Oh, for sure. T-shirt challenge is what we call that. And finally, the reason why this popped into my brain is because I would love to be able to do what one fella in, I believe it was New Orleans, or outside of New Orleans, did. His name is Bill Pratt, and he loves airplanes so much that he spent 9 years learning how to put one together. It's called a Spitfire, and this Spitfire was one of the warplanes that they used to use, the fighter jet that they used to save Great Britain after the U.S. had entered the war. It was a single-seat fighter aircraft that helped fight off the German Air Force, discouraging Adolf Hitler from invading. One of the Spitfires that served in the war, Pratt was built entirely from wood. He's 86 years old, and he's in Hammond, Louisiana resident, and bought the blueprints for the plane in 1970s from England. And he said, as far as I know, that's the only example in the United States.
He's wrong. Me and my buddies built a World War II plane in our barracks.
Did you?
Several times.
Yeah, several times?
Yep. And then we built we shaved and crafted a large wooden ship in our basement of our one barracks.
I always get, because you guys know by now.
And that's
now, like,
not
if you've
me
been
copying
following my...
Gibbs from NCIS.
If you've been, who was the other guy from NCIS? Ducky? Shout out longtime stoolie Ducky.
I met Ducky at the Marine Corps Ball 2 years ago. He's
Did
British.
You?
He's a delight.
He seems like a delight. You could just stick him in your pocket.
He's
and
a little fella.
Around.
I towered over him.
Mm-hmm. He's a little fella. But whenever you're doing stuff like, I've been watching all these weird Instagram videos. Can you imagine the thrill of being in your garage and putting together a wooden canoe? just from the beginning steps, and it just looks beautiful. Not like a really crude one, but one that has like the stripes of wood where it looks like the old parquet floor in Boston, where it's just beautifully done, sealed, shellacked, and all that stuff. Somebody walks in and they see the canoe and they're like, oh, where'd you get that? Oh, I've been building this over the last 18 months. Can you imagine the stunt that that would be?
I have found, though, because you meet so many different people in your unit from all across the country and so many different backgrounds, there were so many talented people, like the guys, you roll your eyes at the guys who would work on their cars in the lot in the weekend, but some of them were so skilled at it and really cool stuff, and others really good at like crafts and shit like that. Like there's certain areas on base where you can actually go and do, like there's wood shops and workshops, and some of our guys would go utilize that, and the stuff they created was actually pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, I've never had that sort of talent or desire to build those sorts of things, but I can't even imagine. You're talking about a canoe. How about longtime Stewie Tim Allen? He built a freaking hot rod in his garage and then drove that thing.
I can't believe I've never told this story before. Whenever I was a company gunny, I walked through the barracks. I would do barracks inspection
and
like
Tim
three
Allen
times a week.
Was there.
And Tim Allen was there. He was ripping coke and stuff like that. So I go into one of the barracks rooms, and one of the Marines was from Montana. And in his room, he had brought back from Montana this strip of, like, I think it was deer skin, and he was turning it into leather. Like, in his barracks room, he had it tied up with all the how you have to tie it really taut over and over again and shave it down. And then on the weekends, he would bring it out into the sun outside, into the big grassy area outside the barracks, and would have leather. He was trying to make his own leather. And I was like, what are you doing with this, devil dog? And he was like, oh, I'm just trying to sell some wallets. I'm going to make my own wallets from deer. I was like, whoa.
That's very entrepreneurial. That seems cool, but if you're his roommate, fuck that. Yeah, sorry. Seriously. No thanks. You look over the night and he's like.
Well, he was a corporal, so he had his own room, luckily.
Well, I would imagine, though, he's just sitting there in the dark, just like whittling down the hide to get to the leather. That's definitely not what you want to see when you roll over in bed at night.
But, not at all.
But
a lot
back
of
to
pastimes.
Mr. Pratt. Back to Mr. Pratt. He built this 23-foot-long plane in his garage. I would love to just hang out with him. He is the exact type of guy that right now I want to hang out with older veterans and get their stories, listen to them. If Mr. Pratt lived in my neighborhood, I imagine his garage, he probably has a 3-car garage at least, and everything is neat. Like if you think about what his garage looks like, he has these white cabinets that are open. On top of that, he has those boards that have the tiny little holes. Each tool has its home that it's been in for years. There's no dust in there, but every single tool was built before 1970 because the new shit just doesn't work the same. He has all of that stuff and nothing. He doesn't drink anything but PBR, and he hands you one. I imagine him. He's just like Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino.
Yeah, I could certainly picture that. And I have two thoughts here on Mr. Pratt. Number one, the balls it takes to not only have the patience to build your own plane, but to build a functioning airplane that then you knew were going to go fly yourself, to get into something that you've made. No testing whatsoever, just assuming you put it all together properly and it's going to work. Credit to him. And then also, I like this line. He said, a lot of people are building kit airplanes now. Some are all metal and some are composite construction. Not too many people are building wooden aircraft now. That was a lot more popular back in the 70s. Modern construction methods have kind of moved on.
Was it, though?
I mean, like, you don't say, Mr. Pratt, we're not building F-35s in garages. That's not what's happening. Go. Okay. Got it.
I love Mr. Pratt. If anybody knows Mr. Pratt, let's get Mr. Pratt on the show. He can walk us through. I would love to go do a video with Mr. Pratt. I'd fly in his wooden plane.
That's
for some
what I was
reason.
Gonna say. Would you get in his plane?
I'll say this. I trust somebody twice. There's two times I trust somebody. You tell me you made it. You can do a haircut. You built your own plane. I'll fly in that bitch in a second.
I'm in.
I'll film it from the ground.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I got a parachute just in case.
I probably would. It's beautiful up here. It's beautiful. All right, let's move on to round number two. Round number two, this kind of popped into my head this weekend because I have had a lot of time sitting around just fucking around on Instagram, fucking around on the internet in general. And I was thinking whenever I saw this video, so this video has these two guys and they're having like magnet races where they have the different poles of the different magnets and they're trying to get one central magnet into a place by using the magnetic force of only the other two magnetic fields to move the magnet in the middle. I know that sounds confusing, but when I was watching it, I was like, how does this work? honestly, I need both of your opinions. Honestly, do you understand magnets?
I mean, outside of the fact that there's magnetic fields and, you know, the opposites attract. No, that's the extent. I probably learned about it in eighth grade science class, but I don't really remember it all too well.
That's crazy. Like every 1,000 or so years, the magnetic poles flip upside down on the Earth, on planet Earth. So like,
what?
Yeah, they flip. They switch. It's crazy.
No.
I swear to God.
So what's that
going
to do to compasses? So then you're just going to go due south?
Chaps, if I understood how magnets work, I would tell you. I don't understand any of it. I was in the military. No idea how a helicopter worked. Got in them. Didn't understand how it worked. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm trusting magic on this one.
Helicopters make more sense to me than regular planes. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been sitting at, like, a bar at an airport and said to a pilot, tell me how planes fly. And they said, well, I can give you the science answer. I can give you the pilot answer. And the pilot answer is just magic. Yeah. I don't think anybody really – how do you wrap your head around something like that? Do you guys remember a couple weeks ago? I don't understand people who are super smart, period. Like people like my wife. She's brilliant. But there's people who are at a different level of understanding math and science. Like that one woman who I believe she's only 25 or 26 years old. She figured out a code that could send a satellite signal through multiple other satellite signals throughout different junctions in space of satellites that were moving at thousands of miles per hour, where she could look inside a black hole and take a picture of the black hole for the first time. The pages of the code that she had to design stacked up, just nothing but text files, was like 1,500 pages in order to get that right. Imagine going through and doing something like that. I don't understand how brains work.
Well, I think people like that, I'm not trying to minimize, but their brains are built differently. I don't think there's a certain level of intelligence you can't teach, and those people just possess that level of intelligence.
I don't know if I believe in numbers.
Okay.
I like that. Let's explore that a little bit.
I think planes, my grandfather, he was a pilot. He always used to say, just lift over drag. All right, not Corona. Anyway, it was just lift over drag. If you think about it, if you put your arm out the window in a car that's going really fast on the highway and you move your hand,
your
arm goes up and back. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I get that it's a lot more complicated than that, but in its simplest form, that's it. So
right,
I get planes.
But also thinking about whenever you have your hand out of the 1993 Datsun truck with your grandfather, if you put your hand just a little bit too far flat, it goes all the way back.
Yeah.
Like the amount of time that you are flying perfectly in the air, not fucking up anything, is crazy. So I also made a list of things that I don't understand. Me and Kyle did it this morning. There's a lot of things that I don't understand, and I think that people
this
get
list
to the place-
is horrible. But go on.
What?
Why is it horrible?
I'm judging the shit out of this list, but go on. Tell me the things you don't understand.
Well, let's go through the first one. I have magnetic fields are the first one that I don't understand. Kyle added wireless data transmission like internet, radio, or Bluetooth. Are you trying to say that you understand how that works?
No, I don't understand how that works. As the list goes on, this one is an acceptable question. I don't understand.
Well, aren't we just trying to make people have an enjoyable thing to think about? Because if you're listening to this and you tell me that you understand magnets, I want you to slide into my DMs. We'll have you back on the show. We'll explain magnets later on this week.
Well, that's
we got nothing but time.
The Insane Clown Posse went viral for that one music video they have where they're like not joking. They're like, and how do magnets work or whatever? And I went to the March of the Juggalos and they all had signs a couple years ago in D.C. They were mad at the FBI. And they all had signs that said like, how do magnets work? They've adopted it.
Oh, yeah. They were mad at the FBI because they got listed as a terrorist organization.
Indeed. And there's a whole group of veteran Juggalos there. Anyways, how do magnets work is a big Juggalo thing, by the way.
Oh,
so
my God.
Maybe
if you're a
them,
veteran Juggalo, we need you on the
please,
show.
Please, please, please.
Big time. I don't know the Venn diagram of Juggalos, ZBT listeners, and veterans, how they all go together. But if you're in that one little middle piece of the pie, mm-hmm. we need you on the show mm-hmm. big time. The next one that I had up, Kyle did this one too. Boats. How the fuck don't they sink? Now, I understand the wood ones because a wood, like a duck, is made of wood. So if you have a duck. What? Guns.
Continue. Go ahead.
If you have a boat, a witch, and a duck, they all float. So therefore, they're all made of wood. But if you have like a steel boat, How does, like an aircraft carrier, how do they test it before it gets into water? They just drop, you've seen those videos where they'll have the big, huge cruise ships that are up on like stilts, and then they just drop it in the water. It kind of weebles, wobbles, but it doesn't fall down. And the next thing you know, it's floating for the next 200 years. How the fuck does that happen?
Going back, they do a little math before they drop that thing in the water. They just understand it.
We're not in on numbers either, cunts. I don't. Okay.
Boats in its simplest form. Again, this is, they're very rudimentary. But if the boat is, obviously.
I believe you. When you preface that with rudimentary, I believed you automatically.
We're in.
If something is less dense, it floats. So the way boats, especially like aircraft carriers, cruise ships that look, by all accounts, should not float. There's less volume in that boat than the amount of water it's displacing. So that's why it's able to float.
Okay.
I want to go out to the first people that are designing aircraft carrier. You just take it back to kindergarten. If you're standing there in kindergarten with Miss Whitaker's class and she's already taken away three of your bears for the day because you're already bad. It's before 9 a.m. and you're already going to get in trouble whenever you go home. You know it. But you're standing at the Naval Yard in Philadelphia and you look out. Somebody has an aircraft carrier. You look at the kindergarten class and we're going to play the old school game, does it float? We've brought a big old bucket. We have an apple, an orange, a banana, a potato. We're going to put all these into the water and then we're going to put the aircraft carrier in. Does it float? Every single one of those kindergartners says no to the aircraft carrier. And I do too. I'm looking at it from the side. It's like sitting there by the other boats that are in the water. I'm like, nah, that thing doesn't float. There's no way. Mm-hmm. And then you put all that weight on it. How do you do that? How does a C-130 fly with a tank in the back? I mean, come on. All right, let's move on to the next one. There's music or videos on DVDs, record players, and CDs. That's one that I don't understand.
Yeah, even going all the way back to 8 tracks, whatever. Like, I don't know how you put all of that on. It's just on this little disc. Where is it, though? I see that there's a DVD in front of me, or that there's a record, but how is there music on that?
It's like, how's the internet on a tiny chip in my computer? I don't understand that at all. I don't understand chips.
Oh, yeah, I don't understand. How are we talking in real time right now?
I don't know.
That's bananas.
I still don't understand how radio works. I'm on radio every night. I'm like, how are people hearing this? I don't know. Anyway, it's crazy.
Kate seems annoyed by this list.
I just don't understand any of this stuff. Yeah. No, it's the list at the bottom. It's the questions I saw at the bottom that I'm like, what are we doing here? Go on. Go on. This is a good list. Keep going.
All right. How do tires last so long? That's another one.
Yeah. I don't necessarily understand what you don't get about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, just think about whenever you're rubbing a pencil, trying to get the eraser on a pencil, and you're trying to get the pencil mark away. Mm-hmm. How fast that eraser goes away.
Yes, well,
putting your hand down whenever you're driving 80 miles an hour and how fast your skin will going to remove. Tires, you touch it, it's still kind of soft whenever you touch it. It's not super hard like rock, and it sticks around for 60,000 miles.
Yeah, it's just thicker. It's just a thicker rubber. I think that one's pretty simple.
I don't think it's simple at all. I bet I would guarantee you, Cons, if I gave you rubber, metal, and air, you could not make a tire.
I would not necessarily argue with that. I don't know where it would even begin.
See, we're trying to make it act like it's simple, but if you have to design these things from the beginning, none of our dumbasses are going to be able to do it. We already talked about how do planes fly. The next one is trains. They're very strong. Do they use gas?
No, at this point, they use electricity.
Do that. See, that makes it even more impressive. Think about how long a train is and how much weight is on the inside. Not even like an Amtrak train, but when you're talking about cargo train moving from Jacksonville, Florida, all the way to San Diego on one track, and they're pulling all that weight, to me, that is unbelievable that we figured that out.
Especially the old-timey ones is just coal. What are we doing there? Coal. You know? Coal.
Or
that?
Steam.
Steam. Yeah.
Crazy town.
All right, next one. Think about the plumbing in airports. Where does all that pee
this
and
is where
go?
The list starts to go downhill for me.
I mean, that's just like a house. Where right. does all, where does all your plumbing go in your house? It's just
through,
on a larger scale.
It goes I know, through pipes but, to the sewage facility.
I tweeted about this a couple weeks ago whenever I was leaving. I don't remember where I was leaving, but I remember sitting in the airport, Dulles. I was at Dulles and watching all the people go. Next time you're at an airport, seriously, sit outside the bathroom. This is kind of creepy, I guess, to say.
Yeah, maybe don't.
Sit outside the bathroom and watch how many people go in and out and think about all the pee and poop that just disappears and goes on forever and how big Dulles is. It's huge.
So I'm actually not going to do that. number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, all these facilities, they just have sewage treatment plants that will treat all the sewage that comes through. And depending on the size of the installation will dictate the size of the sewage treatment plant necessary.
Yeah.
Right. Cursory, I know how this all works. But whenever you put it into actual practice and think about this, there's a guy who, whenever I was tweeting about this, went into my DMs and he was like, hey, I'm actually a mechanical engineer. This is my job. Like, that's what I do, is I design large-scale bathrooms. And he said it is really weird whenever you step back and think, all these people are shitting and pissing, and it's going in one place, and no one ever thinks about that it just goes someplace. Mm-hmm. And think about the first time somebody was like, I'm going to put a bathroom in my house, and you had to be like, you're going to do what? Like, switching from – you had to be the – I bet everybody, the first person that had an indoor bathroom – everybody else on the block, they thought they were a nasty little recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, what are you doing that inside for? It's going to make everything smell.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Kate hate a topic as much as this one we're going through here. This one was from Kyle, too. He said, blood, the body just fucking makes it. It makes the perfect amount. That's weird.
That is weird. That is weird. But here's what I will say, and this actually goes with the one I added at the end. I think you just have to accept at a certain point that the human body is an unbelievable machine that was made, you know, I don't know what people believe in, but it's just a very impressive machine. When you realize the different things the human body can do, the way it you know, as apropos, you know, the way it fights off a virus, the way it fights off a common cold, the way it deals with sleep, lack of sleep, all the different things the body can do, I think you just have to say,
knows when you have a boner whether to ejaculate or to pee.
Yeah. That's a good thought. Yeah, but there's just so many things. Unless you just study biology, you're never really going to fully understand all of it.
Amen.
Kate, any thoughts on that?
Amen, brother. Yeah, no, it's crazy. It is crazy. I don't know how blood
like
works.
Kate, you go to donate blood, say that, because a lot of blood banks are in heavy need because people aren't going out and donating blood, so they do. If you are able to do that, you're an able-bodied person, go donate blood. But if you get a quart of blood removed, next thing you know, a couple weeks later, your body's like, oh, we ran some tests. We need another quart. Make it up, reds and whites.
Yeah, the marrow's just pumping it out.
It's like there's all these like little people inside you just, you know, running the factory on a daily basis.
It's true.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Platelets, red blood cells, white blood cells, the whole shebang.
The next one.
Here's another good one.
Okay.
Asparagus pee. It happens so fast. That's on the list.
It does. Okay. That you have to admit, it's fascinating. Like, whenever you go in, I love to have a good asparagus meal. Like, one of my favorite meals is a little bit of fish, like a nice little pan-seared fish with some asparagus and maybe some broccoli florets to go along with it. As soon as you go, an hour later, no matter what you've drank, as soon as the water hits the potty, you know exactly what you ate again. It's a reminder that I had asparagus. I don't know why it does that. It's one of the only foods that does that. Why?
One time I ate like 7 rolls of cherry flavored Lifesavers at Christmas when I was like 5. Mm-hmm. And I did it sneakily, and then my pee was red, and my mom was like, she's blood in her piss. Yeah. And then I had to admit that I ate all the candy.
Great, great Christmas.
Cool story.
All right. I think that's about anything else that you guys wanted to mention that you didn't understand.
Yeah. Pregnancy. Like, a human grows inside another human.
That is fascinating.
Yeah. That's wild.
It is crazy town.
Come on.
It's crazy.
Kate, is there anything that you want to add?
Some others that I see on the list that are just eyeglasses. Who the fuck figured that out?
Yeah, that's
shout
a good
Ben
one.
Franklin.
Don't take the other one because I want to say the other one.
Okay,
my
go
last
ahead.
One.
Go
All
ahead.
Right, the last one I don't understand, computer memory. I will never understand computer memory. I mean, whenever you think about a terabyte of memory is so much. Like, how many Bibles, if you just had the text of a Bible, do you think you could fit in a terabyte?
I have no idea. I've never even given thought to that.
I just assume, like, planes, all this stuff is magic. I just, in my world, I just take it for granted, and I'm like, it is what it is, and I don't think about
because
it.
Because I've been recording this show on my computer, like my side of the show, for 3.5 years total that I've done. And this is over 250 shows that we have, which are probably about an hour long each. The total amount is only like 30 gigs or something like that. The amount of information that's there is insane. When you talk about text volume of a terabyte, how many terabytes do you think of information are in your brain? Which one do you think is more? The amount of information you have in your own brain or a terabyte of information?
A terabyte.
I don't believe in numbers, so I don't know.
I just think people who can do computer stuff is just wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Here's my promise.
For all of these items.
Oh, good. Keep this round going.
I like this round. This stuff's fascinating.
This round was fun. I like Debbie doing Downer stuff like this. For some reason.
For all of these that I don't fully understand, I'm going to research. And I want to know more about the ones I don't understand.
Oh, I'll give you three. Let's do two for Friday's episode.
Okay.
One, the first one, asparagus pee. Need to know why that happens. And the next one, let's do blood. How do you remake your blood?
Okay.
Asparagus being blood. Homework for cons. Love it. All right. Let's move on to round three before Kate quits the show.
Or we should have a corpsman tell us.
Oh. Ooh. True. Before we get going with round number three, I want to tell you about Upstart, because as most of you have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, but getting out of it is hard, especially if your credit score isn't all that great. Thankfully, now to Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows that you're more than just your credit score. They offer a smarter interest rate to help you pay off your high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness, because when I got back from Japan, my credit was screwed. I didn't pay any of my payments that I was supposed to because I was a dumb idiot. I came back with skyrocketed credit score, which I actually wrote a blog about just this weekend, so you might want to go check that out. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes that you are more than your credit score. They actually believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score at all. A lot of people are concerned about that. Like, if you check your credit score, that could ding you. This is a soft pull, so it won't do that. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off their credit cards and meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly Upstart payment. See why Upstart is ranked the top in their category with 4.9 out of a 5-star rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/ZBT to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate, it only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/ZBT.
All right, coming to us from Hope Hodgsek at Military Times. For the second time in less than a week, the U.S. has intercepted Russian maritime surveillance aircraft in what is known as the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone. Two pairs of Tu-142 maritime recon and anti-sub warfare aircraft were attacked and intercepted Saturday by F-22 Raptors.
We're tracked, not attacked. Big difference.
Oh, we're tracked. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Keep going.
Two pairs of recon and anti-sub aircraft were intercepted on Saturday by our Air Force Raptors. And basically, it was kind of a thing in the sky where they were tracking each other. It was kind of a big thing. The Russian aircraft entered the area from the west and north of Alaska, respectively. So the western pair of Russian planes remained in the airspace for about 4 hours. They were just loitering like a bunch of teens outside a 7-Eleven, not going anywhere. And then our U.S. Air Force and Navy had to come through like the angry shopkeeper and be like, get the fuck out of here. You've been loitering too long. They were Jay and Silent Bob in it.
Oh.
Russia was Jay and Silent Bob in it in our airspace up above Alaska. It's another thing in the string of, like, they just keep poking us with a stick. They're over in Syria poking us with a stick. They're in our airspace in Alaska poking us with a stick. So they're just, as per usual, being enormous assholes.
Yeah.
Well, they continued on. They just didn't do it once. They did it twice. And another time they came through and they stayed in the airspace for 4 hours again. And this time it was the Russian Tu-95 heavy bombers. Kyle wants us to say more like Pu-95s. Am I right?
Sting.
They've been spotted over the international waters for this exercise. Now, whenever you're there and you see these Russian planes that are in your airspace, it reminds me of like behind enemy lines types of situation where you know they're not supposed to be in that area. Your butt has to just be so puckered if you're one of these F-22 pilots and you're in the air, because there's been photos that were released by the DOD of photos that we took from our cockpit, and you can look over. You could see the F-22 wing. You could see their planes going along the side. For 4 hours, 4 hours is so long in a fighter jet that they had to bring in the refueling aircraft. So you're getting refueled watching these. So that means that the Russians probably had to be refueled too. You're watching all of this as tensions are rising. And I just want to say, this is the point of the entire thing. Hey, Russia, There's a fucking global pandemic. Can you fucking not right now,
right?
Dude?
Give
Could you
a,
stop it in Syria?
Give
like,
it
you're
weeks.
Coming out. You're bombing places in Syria. You're doing shit. You're still at war with Ukraine. Can you just not? Can we just be people for a second? Stop it with trying to get the USSR back. Putin, get your shit together. Just call a worldwide ceasefire. Let's take a deep breath and be like, look, let's be humans. Let's support each other. Let's have the scientific community all work together to get this pandemic under control. And then you can come back to Alaska and you'll fly by us for 4 hours. We'll get back to our old thing. But for right now, just fucking stop it, please. Just stop it.
He's being the worst. He's being so annoying right now. Putin's being so.
Putin's such a basic ass little bitch.
You know who watched this whole crazy plane exchange from her window?
Who?
Sarah Palin.
Oh, you know she can see Russia from her house.
I can see the whole exchange from my house up there. Okay. Yeah. But Putin, can you not?
So one of the main parts that I want to say here is that they actually released the general that's in charge of NORAD fighters, which is General Terrence O'Shaughnessy. He's a NORAD commander. He issued in a statement that he said, if you do it again, I'll stab you in the face with a soldering iron, he said, while he's in charge. And NORAD
that's
also
big words from the same group that tracks Santa every year. That's
I know, right?
A hot.
Yeah, don't
hot.
Tell the kids that that's yeah, how the NORAD commanders yeah. talk in the rest of the year.
Sheesh, colon is.
And
talking.
We mentioned the fact that we got the pictures of looking out of our cockpits into their planes. NORAD took an unprecedented move and released the audio of the two pilots talking back and forth with each other, and also NORAD was on the ground. We're going to play that for you right now. Here it is.
Wow, that is crazy that that's the exchange. That's I'm not surprised to hear it's come to that point, though. Sheesh.
And it's contentious. Usually whenever you have call signs and things like that, they stripped it all down, just went basically nuts to bolts right there. Pretty intense stuff. As always, whenever there's foreign conflicts, we'll keep you in the loop. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening in Santa's region up in NORAD. Let's move on to round number four. Round number four comes to us from our friend Andrew Dyer at the San Diego Union-Tribune. As you know, because of coronavirus all over the place, the military has actually issued an order. The DOD has issued an order that there is a complete stop move in a place right now. I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen a DOD-wide stop move since I've been following anything in the military. Have you guys?
No.
Ever.
Mm-mm.
This is
I bet the last time it's happened has got to be like right after September 11th and was probably only for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Nothing on this scale. It's very unprecedented.
Yeah,
and I don't know that for sure. That's just pulling it out of my asshole. Like,
yes.
I don't know if that's what's happening at all. But we have a complete stop move for the entire DOD all the way until May 11th. And now, as you know, the DOD is privy to a little bit more information than like local school districts. May 11th there, to me, gives an indication of when the government kind of actually expects things to get back to normal. To me, that's the date, is May 11th, because that's what they're saying is we can go back to our normal day-to-day lives. May 11th is what I'll look at. But you have people all across. We've talked to people in our DMs on Instagram that are still in Afghanistan, which the Afghanistan situation, if you don't know what's going on there, they have these Connex boxes because there are people who have come in from China, like workers and things like that, and all of the places because the pandemic is everywhere now. But people in Afghanistan, soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines are coming down with the symptoms of coronavirus, and they're essentially being told to stay in these Connex box type of rooms. They have to take a saliva sample, ship that saliva sample all the way to Germany. Then they have to get word on if they test positive corona or not while they're waiting. Can you imagine being in one of those Connex boxes in a deployed zone, knowing that you're not leaving for another 2 months when you were supposed to come home, and you might have coronavirus? That would be an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, and like you said, it's even there's people that are on the quarantines out there, but then it's like whole units are just, even whether they have it or not, they're just stuck there for another several months. Like if you have kids back home and families, like mm-hmm. God, that, and even if you don't, you just want to keep going on with your life. Like it
sure.
just really, really sucks, because looking forward to the end of deployment is such a big motivator to keep you going through that.
And then just think about where you're at if you're at the tail end of your deployment, and then all of a sudden, oh wait, sorry, we're gonna tack 2 more months on that. That would just crush you.
Dude, because you're at such, and we haven't really talked about this, and we've been joking about coronavirus, but there is, I mean, people are dying. Like, it's serious. There's 300 deaths and almost 400 deaths in Italy right now. Like, the amount that I would venture to say today, whenever the numbers are released, it's going to be exponentially higher because there are so many more kits that were out there. We're about to have even more go through. But whenever you're sitting there at the end of a deployment, you are so done with being deployed. Mm-hmm. I remember the feeling whenever I was finally leaving Camp Fallujah, and I'm sure you guys have this same feeling as well, that it is so draining. They always say that the most of the combat deaths that you're going to experience are your first 2 weeks in country or your last 3 weeks in country, because complacency sets in so much. You're just so tired. You can only stay focused for so long. If they're making these folks do combat operations after they were extended for 2 months, man, I just don't know what's going to come.
I don't know. That's a recipe. We don't know
disaster.
If they're doing that or not. We're not sure what they're doing, but
I'm hoping they're not.
And then also, if it goes spreads to the Afghan people, they have no medical structure at all. So they have no hospitals. Italy has at least hospitals. They don't.
And their hospitals are filled. I saw something that was very cool. Boris Johnson, who's I believe the Prime Minister of England right now, they actually are telling Rolls Royce and some of their luxury brands that have these really advanced factories to stop making their cars and stop making ventilators. Like, you're really going to have. That's probably going to happen here as well, where the factories that are equipped to do that type of things are going to have to help folks. They're going to have to bring in the military. I saw one of the military reporters, I forget who it was, but she works for Defense One. She was saying that the military will be useful in this because we're used to being deployed to places like Africa that had a big Ebola outbreak or the cholera outbreak that happened in Haiti, where the military has the ability to build 500 bed hospitals pretty quickly where you can have those type of things. That's what we should be used for right now. Like, the going to war with Russia, doing things in Syria, Afghanistan, all that stuff has to be paused. We have to think of civilization and what we're going to do
I think that's what we'll start to see. And then, too, we've seen what's happening on all the cruise ships and stuff like that. Well, it's finally come to a Navy ship. A U.S. sailor aboard the USS Boxer stationed out of – right now it's, like, in the port of San Diego. But a sailor that was aboard that ship tested positive. And that, it's like – on the cruise ships, at least it's little couples in their own rooms. Mm-hmm. It's, like, a huge birthing area. And once it starts spreading on a Navy ship, like, forget it. So who knows how that's going to go, too. It's pretty – pretty crazy.
And it's crazy how fast everything is moving, too. I mean, just this morning, Chaps, going to your point about the military stepping in New York, Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo have asked for help from the U.S. military already. So, I mean, we're already on the way to going there to help deal with this situation that, again, is very unprecedented.
If you're on a Navy ship, you better keep your dip spit bottles real closed up. Keep them real neat. Don't be spitting on the edges or down the side. Get it right down the middle.
And we do a lot of boot goofing on the show. We make fun of other branches of service, clowns on the Navy, I clown on the Army, we clown on the Air Force, we clown on the Coast Guard. But I just want to say right now that you guys and ladies that are in the military are always available. And to me, it really never ceases to amaze me what they're doing. And first responders as well. A first responder, if you're a police officer, if you're a fireman, if you're an ambulance driver, you're not concerned about if they have coronavirus whenever you get the call. You're still doing it. You're going out there and you're being heroic. And it just brings me to the point that I say all the time, that courage is not the absence of fear, but moving forward despite fear. And going into these communities and doing these things and building things for people, you're going to have that tinge of fear inside your belly. But we know and we trust that you're going to go out there and do the right thing. You're going to do everything that you can, and you're going to think of yourself last. And to me, that we still have complete DOD, we still have first responders that are willing to put other people first, is why humanity still has a little bit of hope. Let's move on to save rounds. Alibis, Cons, we'll start with you.
So, you know, Kate will always remind us that her dad is one of 13. It's kind of a quirky little fact.
Yeah.
My quirky little fact, we're talking about computers and people, and I don't not understand how any of that works. My cousin's actually the guy who created Venmo.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's my fun fact. Him and another guy.
I saw Venmo on the sheet, and I was like, hopefully Cons not going to ask for donations right now.
No. And then I would be remiss on this day in 1802, good old Thomas Jefferson signed the document that founded the United States Military Academy, and it read that the said corps, when so organized, shall be stationed at West Point in the state of New York and shall constitute a military academy. So happy Founders Day to West Point, which I should also add, again, we're talking about things that are unprecedented. They just said, like, don't come back from spring break. Usually, like, when crazy things happen, whether
West Point said it too. I saw the Air Force Academy did. West Point did too?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually when there's something crazy going on in the countries and maybe other colleges will say, like, hey, we're, like, canceling classes, the military academies usually press on. So for the military academies to step back and say, like, hey, we don't know what's going to happen. The semester might be canceled. Graduation might be canceled. That is really, really scary. And you know, shout to all the collegiate athletes, not just at the military academies, but across the country. I know it's, you know, all relative, but to have your entire senior year, senior season taken away.
High school kids,
too. Kind of a crummy way. High school kids, too. Yeah, it's just kind of stinks. And again, health is paramount above all else, but you know, these things are definitely hitting people in a lot of
just
different ways.
Just spitballing, because we're not in a hurry to get out of here today. What do you guys think? Because I saw there was some chatter that was going on Twitter that the Department of Education might step in and be like, schools are shut down for the remainder of the year. Like, what do you do? Like, what, they just not get that 3 months of education?
I guess. I don't know.
Like, do you just automatically pass people to the next grade? Like, what the fuck happens?
Yeah.
Probably trying to shift to online learning as fast as they can. But again, not, you know, kids who have that stuff, those tools are lucky.
Yeah.
A lot of kids don't. A lot of kids don't even have meals besides at school. So, yeah. So a lot to think about. I was saying this weekend, if you donate $25 or more to Meals on Wheels or Feeding America or something, I'll sing a personal song just for you. I'll tailor it to you. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing that over the weekend, singing people's songs to donate to food places. But yeah, it's craziness.
And if you're listening to the show, you obviously like the show. And one of the things that we are going to do, at least Kate and I will, Khan's going to try, depending on what his job allows him, like his full-time job allows him to do, if he's still working and doing things. If we can, and there's large-scale shutdowns, we will go live on YouTube. We'll go live on Instagram and different places to keep you guys in a trend. You can we can have like mailbags. We'll shoot the shit. We'll just hang out, be very loose with it, and just kind of chill, because you're going to get bored sitting in your house reading nothing but NPR, nothing but refreshing Twitter and the coronavirus hashtag all the time. So we're going to try to be here. Kate, what's your save round?
All right, not to bring the mood down again or anything like that, but definitely worth saying and worth mentioning. We mentioned last week that a rocket attack in Iraq had killed a member of the Oklahoma National Guard. Mm. I don't think I went into specifics on it, but the name has been released. It was Staff Sergeant Marshall D. Roberts of Owosso, Oklahoma, and he was killed in a rocket attack. And then we got this DM from a listener who said, just wanted to reach out, and we got this over the weekend, and mentioned that one of the American service members killed in the rocket attack last night was a member of the Oklahoma National Guard. He loved the show. He was a very close family friend and served with me the last few years. His wife is also a unit member with us, and they had a young daughter. So they said, I just want this to be about his family. So, I mean, where do you even find the words? I mean, it's just gutting. I can't imagine what they're going through. So I don't know if there's anything we could do, but everybody just lift them up in your thoughts and minds, like T's and P's, thoughts and prayers, but genuinely really thinking of that family and just, yeah, it's pretty gutting. Sorry to.
No, whenever it adds, mentioning. I think that sometimes that's the most appropriate thing to do is whenever it hits you in a personal way. I mean, we've talked about that on episodes long in the past. When did the war become real to you? And I think the war becomes real to a lot of us when there is that personal connection. Obviously, all three of us have that personal connection in a very personal way. But I remember the first time that I got a call that there was somebody that was a canine handler who was killed in Iraq. His name was Adam Cann, and he was killed just outside of Fallujah. That name will stick with me for the rest of my life because it was a personal connection. And while I was sitting in my apartment in Okinawa, Japan, drinking probably a whiskey sour at the time, that's the moment that the war became real to me because it was personal. This becomes real to people every single day. Whenever we have a death that still takes place in Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever at, it's still very real to that family. And it's sad that 19 years later that we have to know somebody for it to really hit you like a ton of bricks. But it is still a very real thing.
I also want to say also killed in that attack was Army Specialist Juan Miguel Mendez Covarrubias, age 27, of California, of Hanford, California. So two people lost in that. One of them, Zero Blog 30 listener, and just, yeah, you're right. It just really brings it home. So thinking of them.
And I also want to, my save round is I want to give a shout out to my wife. This isn't something that I do publicly a lot, but she is just such a great lady with such an unbelievable heart. This is a stressful time for a lot of people, especially those vulnerable communities, which would be like the elderly and things like that. My wife took a list from our church of some of the elderly folks that are in our church that are living in nursing homes, that are living in assisted care, that went to our church a long time ago. And she took her day yesterday, her entire afternoon, and was going through the list and calling people and checking on them. And I thought that the list was daunting, the amount of people that she had, because my wife, if you're on the phone with her, she doesn't get off the phone. Like, she's terrible at it, like closing down conversations. Whether if she says it's going to be a quick work conversation, I know it's going to be an hour, so she'll just keep on going. She sat there and listened to these old ladies, old men, ramble about what's going on in their nursing home, getting their temperatures taken all the time. And she did it with such an unbelievable heart. And I like to challenge the listener, like, if you have a older relative, they are nervous. They want to talk to you. Get on the phone. Call people. You're sitting at home. You have time between meetings, time between work responsibilities. If you're able to, reach out to those folks because they want to speak to someone. They don't have the internet. They don't use those things like we do. We don't have that social connection. They're probably feeling very isolated or will very soon. Do what you can for other people. This is a show that we care about character, we care about morals and things like that. Be the best person that you can be in a time where the entire nation is kind of nervous. That's all we have to say today. We'll see you soon. Sound the retreat.